Good evening. Good to have everyone out tonight. We're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the first 13 verses. The title of the lesson is No Excuses. And while that's absolutely true, especially look at verse 13, the intention of the sermon is not to be pressured or put fear or guilt on you. There's lessons to be learned. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you but such as common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, that you may be able to endure it. Well, there's no excuse for that if you read that verse. You know, that we are overtaken by temptation and we fail and we feel miserable and we want to blame somebody, and it's usually somebody else, and we want to feel sorry for ourselves, but temptation happens to everybody. It's nothing uncommon. And secondly, in verse 13, God's not going to allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able. He's never going to put you in a position of His choice where you might fail. Now, He put Jesus be tempted by the devil. Let him have his best shot, but what? He knew Job, what? Wouldn't fail. He would have never let that happen. Well, God's faithful, and He's able to make sure we get through it. So He's not going to put us in anything. He's going to be there. But with a temptation, we'll find a way of escape also. Usually when we're tempted, we're not looking for a way of escape. We're looking for a way to go further down that wrong road. But there is a way out always. It may take a tough choice, because you got to give up what you're desiring so strongly, but there is a way out, and so that you may be able to endure it. And it's lots of times it's painful to overcome your temptation, but you got to endure. You know, you can't just go wallow in it. Well, in verses the Corinthians, the whole background of this is they're over there eating in the idol's temple, in idolatry, and they got a cafeteria type thing. They're over there a lot. And Paul's concerned that they're a little too cozy here. And if the apostle's concerned, God's concerned about that you're getting a little too warm here with these people where, you know, you don't see a whole lot wrong or the danger in it. And so in the first 12 verses, he deals with that. Verses 1 through 4, he's talking about history of Israel. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and they all drank the same spiritual food, and all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Out there, you got a physical nation. And They're immersed into Moses. They got this cloud over them, water them all around as they pass through the Red Sea. And you know, it's like baptism is what he's saying. It's immersion into this old covenant here. And they all had opportunity there. The same opportunity to go to the promised land. And that's where it was intended initially. Verse 5, nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. That means you die out there, then what? That wasn't a good sign that you were a faithful person. And you know, it's a physical nation. They won't go in the promised land because they're scared of the giants in the land. And that did it right there. You don't make one sin at one the wrong time. That one did it. The plan's over. To get them to the promised land, other than Joshua and Caleb, what? They all said, no, we can't do it. So now, he would have destroyed them if he wasn't for Christ. His anger would have burned. So they have to wander in the wilderness 40 years till he can raise up a new generation who's going to have a different attitude. And so that's what he does. And most of them were laid low in the wilderness. I mean, you can be in Christ, and you can end up lost. And most of the church can end up lost if they're not careful. Revelation chapter 2 and 3. 5 of the 7 churches are told to repent just before we bring the hammer down on the whole world. We're going to test the whole world, and we announce to the churches, here's what's wrong, and you need to get it moving. And so it can happen to us, too. And then he gives five examples of the wrongs or the problems that the Corinthians can face here with this temple over here with their idolatry and prostitution. Verse 6 and 7. Now, these things happen as examples for us that we should not crave evil things as they also craved. That's where it started there, Exodus 32. Moses is up on the mountain. He's been there a long time. What happened to Moses? We need a God we can see. And so they had Aaron build him a golden calf. And he did it. He wasn't no better off than them. Moses comes back down the hill and what? Oh, Joshua comes up to him. Man, there's this strange sound going on in the congregation. It's not war. It's not this. They're singing. You know, and they're craving evil things. And if you crave evil things, you're going to get there. Verse 7. And do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it's written, the people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Exodus 32. Moses comes down the mountain. He's so mad he breaks the Ten Commandments. Oh, he was mad. And he said that they sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. I mean, they're worshiping this golden calf, this idolatry. And the Corinthians are over there cozying up to idolatry. They're not idolaters, but what? It's a half a step to get there. And so they sit down to eat and drink and stood up to play. In Church of Christ, the last 20 years, we're getting as close to that line as we can get with all this new worship stuff. And you stood up to play. I mean, we're going to entertain the people. We're going to make it. The Church of Christ can't go that far because we know instrumental music is wrong. So you're wanting to crave this to get people in to be a big mega church like the denominational people. And so it ends up a kind of an entertainment, enjoyment thing. And they stood up to play. That wasn't good. The third thing, verse 8. Nor let us act immorally as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in one day. Oh, the Midian, they weren't supposed to intermarry, and the guys are fooling around with Moabite women. And some guy has the nerve to bring a Midianite woman into the camp for the wrong reasons. And Phineas went in the tent with a spear and speared them both and stopped the plague. The plague stopped at 23,000 people dead. Immorality is wrong. I mean, you know, you're supposed to love your wife and your wife's supposed to love the husband, and that's where the sexual relations are supposed to take place. And they went way beyond. You don't do that. But they have prostitution over in the temple over here in Corinth. That's how they attract people. I was talking to Mike McKellips, who was here this morning, and he said, you know, we're a small church, and we'd like to get a little better, but we got to offer them what other people offer if we're going to do it, but we can't do that. Well, that's right. You can offer them things, but what? How do you check it? How do you restrain it? Once you've got them craving and you're feeding their lust, they're going to want more and more next year. You can bank on that. But verse 9 and 10 is what I want to look at in the Old Testament. Verse 9, nor let us try the Lord as some of them did and were destroyed by the serpents. You can try the Lord. You can test him and push him. You can do it. And you might die by the serpents too. Verse 10, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Oh, grumbling. You know, we all grumble at some sense, but, you know, we need to give all that stuff up. Look at Numbers chapter 21, the first seven verses. And what's interesting about this, trying the Lord, is verse 1 and 2, when the Canaanite, the king of Arad, who lived in the Negev in the desert, heard Israel was coming by the way of Etherim, then he fought against Israel and took some of them captive. So this Canaanite king, you know, he heard they're coming. We got 600,000 men over the age of 20 out there in Israel. This guy's a strong king. So he takes some of them captive. Verse 22. So Israel made a vow to the Lord and said, if thou wilt indeed deliver this people into my hand, then I'll utterly destroy their cities. So they make a deal with God. We make a vow. You get this guy off our back and we'll destroy the rest of them cities. And so they're making a vow. Verse 3, and the Lord heard the voice of Israel and delivered up the Canaanites. So he did it. He delivered them. Oh, that ought to be a wonderful God. I mean, you know, we're going to walk with him and keep his will and everything should be fine. Verse 4, then they set out from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Eden, and the people became impatient because of the journey. We just delivered you from a bad king who was taking you captive and going to take all of you and make you slaves. And now we're impatient because we got to take the long way around Eden. Does, you know, the Lord have any feelings? Does he think he did them a great favor? He's going to protect them anyway, but they made a vow, made a deal. Verse 5, and the people spoke against God, and Moses spoke against God. You can speak against Moses, but you can get an attitude that gets, goes, takes you way beyond what you would think you'd do. And they spoke, and the people spoke against God and Moses, why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there's no food, no water, and we loathe this miserable food. You're only surviving because God's taking care of you daily. And you're griping about what the food, the miserable food you get every day. We can pull it away if you want. You know, they don't think about that. And so they're going to die in a wilderness. I mean, that's their lot in life, and there may be a reason for it, but they don't like that. Verse 6, so the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people so that many people of Israel died. You know, circumstances can get a lot worse. You can try the Lord, and he can definitely make life a lot tougher real quick and even take your life. We're at a point where we just take you off the earth, and we'll solve that problem the easy way. Verse 7, so the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned because we've spoken against the Lord and you. Intercede with the Lord that he may remove the serpents from us. And Moses interceded for the people. Moses is a great man. Despite how they abused him, what does he always do? Look out for their interests. He stands between them and God, pleading with them. They realize they've sinned. They're trying the Lord and demanding things and being impatient and not thinking he has their best interests at heart and not being able to be content and be patient and wait that it might work out really well here. No, they try the Lord, so he wasn't happy. Number 16 is about Korah's rebellion, and it's about grumbling. And what's really unique about it is the next day. That's where it gets really tough. In Number 16, verse 3, and they assembled together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you've gone far enough. For all the congregation are holy, every one of them. And the Lord is in their midst, so why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? I mean, you got this fellow named Korah and a couple other guys, Dathan and Abiram. And they're saying, you know, we're not going to take it anymore. You're not going to rule no more. We're as equal as you are, Moses and Aaron. You want to try to overthrow the church? You want to try to overthrow the eldership? Do you want to take a shot at that? Well, that's what we're talking about. You might not like things, but guess what? They got the position, you know, and you need to be respectful of it. And they said the whole congregation is holy. That's true. But not all of you are the leader, and not all of you are priests. I mean, you know, everybody's got their position. And so they want to know, they think Moses and Aaron have exalted themselves on their own. They're not thinking that God did that, that God's involved. They've forgotten about God. Verse 9 through 11, and Moses is going to speak. Is it not enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and stand before the congregation to minister to them, and that he has brought you near, Korah and all your brothers, sons of Levi, with you? And are you seeking for the priesthood also? They have a special role in taking care of the tabernacle and the temple and the tents and all that stuff. They're special. They're sons of Levi. But they want to rule. They're not happy with Moses ruling. And now they want more? Verse 11, therefore you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. But as for Aaron, who is he that you're grumbling against him? And I can see you being mad at me because I'm the leader. But Aaron's just a high priest. He just does what he's told. And why are you grumbling against Aaron? You know, what is going on here? Well, verse 12, then Moses sent a summons to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. But they said, we'll not come up. Now, Moses intercedes for these people on the mountain already. God listens to Moses. And they're not going to come up and deal with this. Verse 13, is it not enough that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to have us die in the wilderness? But you would also lord it over us? You're not going to tell us what to do. 14. Indeed, you have not brought us into the land of flowing with milk and honey, nor have you given us in an inheritance of the fields and vineyards, which you put out the eyes of those men. We will not come up. No. You're just a mean person and you're going to punish us. We're not coming. We're not listening to you no more. Verse 15, and Moses became very angry and said to the Lord, do not regard their offering. When you've got a guy who has fellowship with God, who's had his prayers answered by God, and everybody knows it, do you want him praying against you? And so he says that, you know, if these fellows die some strange death, the earth opens up and they die strangely, then you'll know the Lord is backing me. And then that happens that day. Verse 40. And as a reminder to the sons of Israel, that no layman who is not of the descendants of Aaron should come near to the burning incense before the Lord, that he might not become like Korah and his company, just as the Lord has spoken to him through Moses. Boy, this was a reminder this day. Them guys pulled the wrong stunt by trying to take over, and you need to think of them as example. You don't need to be trying that. Verse 41. But on the next day, all the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, you're the ones who caused the death of the Lord's people. Did anybody not learn anything yesterday? I mean, the darkness in people's hearts and people died yesterday because they challenged Moses. And now they're grumbling against Moses and Aaron today. The next day. Well, verse 44. And the Lord said to Moses, get away from this congregation that I may consume them instantly. Then they fell on their faces. Hey, you want God to talk to you. I mean, God, get away so I can consume them instantly. I'm through with them. You know. Verse 46. And Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and put it in it fire from the altar and lay incense on it and then bring it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them. For wrath has gone forth from the Lord, the plague has begun. And there's Moses, the guy that they hate, that they don't want anything to do with, stepping up one more time to solve their sin problem, to intercede. I mean, it's just grumbling brings with it other bad attitudes and blinds you to seeing the blessings that you have, and it leads you to doing things irrational and that might provoke the Lord. And it's a good thing we're a spiritual church and we're all connected individually to Christ and we're not all in one land locked place. You know, it could get disastrous real quick. Verse 47. And then Aaron took it as Moses spoke and ran in the midst of the assembly, and behold, the plague had begun among the people. So he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. And he stood his stand between the dead and the living so that the plague was checked. But those who died in the plague were 14,700 besides those who died on account of Korah. 14,700. Aaron takes his stand between the dead and the living. The only question is everybody else going to die here? If the action of these two men weren't, it wasn't done quickly, people are going to keep dying. But they did. And this is written down as an example in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11 and 12. You know, it says, now these things happened to them as an example. And they were written for our instruction, upon whom the end of the ages have come. The New Testament system is the end of the ages. For to fail here, to make the mistakes that these people made and historically paid the price for and were written down on purpose so that people in the future wouldn't make that mistake. That here's how the Lord thinks about these things. Here's His reaction to it. And so, we have instructions. Verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Boy, you better be listening, Corinthians. I mean, this is serious for them. Because they had this great opportunity with this temple and this prostitution, and they got a cafeteria. Everybody goes there for coffee and dinner and supper, and you got a bunch of buddies out in religion there, you know, and you're over there awful lot, and you conscience don't bother you. You need to take heed lest you fall. There's a lot of folks in that Old Testament fell in the wilderness, and they all had the same blessings, and it didn't stop them from dying lost out there. Verse 13, no temptation is overtaken you but such is common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape also, that you may be able to endure it. If you're living in that environment, you know, you've got to walk the other way. You've got to turn. You've got to avoid it. You can't even get close to it. I mean, no telling him the percentage of people who are involved in that temptation. You got temple prostitute. You got in Houston, all these big mega churches, they got cafeterias. We'll give you Sunday lunch for $3.50. Yeah, we got a free gym. Now, you know, you're paying your 10% tithe, so you're paying for it. But the drawing power of all that. And we've got an entertaining service here. I mean, we've got two different band places. We got a church there in Cuba that got that. And they drew a lot of people, a lot of Church of Christ people too. Yeah. Well, we like all that. You need to be careful. The Lord sees all. The Lord has standards of right and wrong. And He won't be bashful about condemning somebody. In the Old Testament, we just did it physically. We can be thankful that every time we grumble, the first time we grumble, that we weren't gone. And, you know, being able to be thankful of what you have, despite what it is, I mean, that gives you contentment and peace and joy and hope. You're not going to die in the wilderness if you stay faithful to Jesus. You're not going to die lost. I mean, if you start craving evil things, There's no boundaries where you can go at that point. If you keep following the crave rather than looking for the way of escape. For Christians, they need to think that, you know, where is the way of escape? And I'm a weak person. Maybe I need to depend on the Lord for strength, you know, and allow Him to work. And all of a sudden, you find the ability to endure. Because He promised He's faithful. He's not going to let you be tempted on what you're able. Now, if you want to go do it, even the Lord can't stop you. You know, you've seen your kids do that. You've done it. You know, you're going to do it no matter what. And guess what? You even knew it wasn't going to turn out well when you started down that road, but you went and did it anyway. And then you paid the consequences. Well, the consequences of the New Testament are eternal. That you keep down these roads. You don't look for the way of escape. Oh, and you get entangled. Whose fault's that? Yeah. I mean, how did the nation of Israel in the first century end up where they ended up? Killing Jesus. What went wrong? They're the same people we're talking about here who had the same scriptures written down, who read them every Sabbath, but yet, what? We don't want this fellow Jesus to rule. Oh, He's good and kind and all that and does miracles. Oh, we'd let Him rule if we didn't have to work, if we didn't have to fight, that didn't need an army. Oh, but when they're talking about that, the truth and following the will of God and doing the commandments of God, we don't want this fellow ruling. And so it's no wonder Jesus prophesied that within 40 years there'd not be one stone left upon another. And who would have believed that when he said it? But history tells us that's true. And you know, to be a Jew and to be a Christian in the first century, you had to take a position that was strong. I mean, if you're coming to be baptized in Acts chapter 2 on the first day of Pentecost there, you know that there's forgiveness of sins being offered. You know that Jesus rules. He's the Christ now. And you, that conviction drives you and leads you. If you stay faithful, you end up saved eternally. If your whole nation gets wiped out, Joshua and Caleb are the only two people who went in the promised land. Only two. Moses is obvious, he's a righteous man. And he's commended. But you know, God told him to speak to the rock. I didn't tell you to strike the rock. That's disrespectful. That is not acceptable. He expects more out of leaders. You need to do it my way. And so he didn't get to go into the promised land and enjoy that. One major failure. But it was disrespectful for his position to do that. And it was all, he was justified in it. He was so angry with the people that he struck the rock. Sure, they were wrong. But he did wrong too. And what's good, it's a good thing you don't have to be perfect to enter the promised land. Because Jesus died for the sins of the world. And if you cling to Jesus, you can continue to be faithful. He'd respond anyway. Won't you come as we stand and sing?